Mr. Eustace, good morning to you.
Good morning, Judge.
And Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, sir.
No, sir.
Then, Mr. Eustace, you may approach. And we still have some folks coming in and out, so hold off for just a second. You may proceed.
Thank you, sir. My name's Bill Eustace. And I may please the court, I am appearing on behalf of the appellant here, Mr. Paul Werner. My argument is quite simple. The story begins January 22nd, 2020. Cass County Sheriff's deputies are called to domestic disturbance in rural Louisville, Nebraska. And they come to the residence and they find that the appellant has assaulted family, friends, and in the process was attempting to assault the sheriff's deputies at the scene. Clearly irrational, I detailed his behavior in the brief. He was clearly suffering from what was a psychotic episode. Ultimately, he was charged with 29 felony counts by the Cass County Attorney's Office. And in the process of this pending case, he was evaluated by a Dr. Terry Davis, who is a forensic psychiatrist, and he's well-respected in our community. And he interviewed Mr. Werner, and he read all the reports, and he had access to the appellant's previous psychiatric issues. He had never really had a full-blown psychotic reaction before. But this was rather unique, and there was violence involved and an attempt at suicide. He was clearly delusional. He was taking orders from aliens, and he thought he was King Arthur and his wife was Guinevere, and that his best friend was Merlin, and he had to kill Merlin because Merlin could read their thoughts. So clearly there's something horribly wrong going here in Mr. Werner's life. I would just read Dr. Davis's summary, and it says, "It is my opinion that Mr. Werner's actions on January 22nd, 2020 were caused by bipolar 1 disorder and not by any alcohol or drug use. It is my opinion that Mr. Werner's mental illness rendered him incapable of knowing right from wrong." And that's the test that's been used in the courts since common law England back in the 1840s, McNaughton and its progeny. And as I indicated earlier, he ultimately was charged with 29 felony counts, including attempted assault on an officer, strangulation, felony child abuse, terroristic threats, and the use of firearm and the commission of a felony. So the psychiatric evaluation itself took place in September of 2020. And upon receipt of that, trial counsel filed a notice of intent to rely upon the insanity defense. And a week later, the state files a motion for a similar examination pursuant to Section 29-2203. A week later, the district court orders an examination by the Lincoln Regional Center in compliance with the request from the state. So we have actually one evaluation completed, and then there was one that was ordered by the court. Ultimately, the one that was ordered by the court was never completed. So we don't have part two of this evaluation, and all we have...
And it's not completed because your client enters into a plea.
Yeah, he had taken a shot through the chin, so his prosthetic device wasn't working so well because it was a fairly recent injury, and the doctor, Dr. Hartman, was unable to really decipher what he was saying.
Did Dr. Davis determine whether your client was competent to stand trial?
Yes. Well, I'm going back to the incident itself. And
okay, he was competent to stand trial. Does that mean he was competent to enter a plea of no contest or guilty? Did Dr. Davis make that determination?
The doctor did and said he was capable of assisting in his own defense and entering a plea, but I'm going all the way back.
I understand.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, and my
he enters this plea of no contest
to six various counts.
With a written plea agreement and indicates he's waiving any defenses
yes,
he may have.
And that's my argument. Clearly he was psychotic and
psychotic when?
At the time of the incident. January 22nd.
But there's a plea that's entered, and you're arguing that he should be able to withdraw the plea.
Yes, and go back.
What is the reason why he should be able to withdraw the plea?
Because the defense of not responsible by reason of insanity should have been explored further, and I think trial counsel was defective in taking him in and pleading him.
Well, that's your ineffective assistance.
Yes, that's in here also.
But you also have two others.
Yes.
And I'd like to understand what it is you're assigning the district court erred. How did they err? And with respect to the motion to withdraw the plea, what's the reason why he should have been able to withdraw his plea?
Well, the test is whether it's prejudicial to the prosecution if they were allowed to withdraw the plea. I think at that time of the...
Well, the test is you have to identify a fair and just reason why he should be able to withdraw.
Sure.
What is that fair and just reason?
That he was psychotic at the time of the incident and that was not pursued and he should not have been held responsible and that a jury should have made that decision. And I think trial counsel just kind of passed it on. I will note that there was a seven-page...
I beg your pardon. Does the law recognize some kind of temporal distinction, psychotic at the time of the episode, but not psychotic at the time of the plea colloquy?
That's correct. And that's what Section 292203 ultimately is trying to decipher. They send him to the regional center and decide whether they're a danger. But
you're not making any contention that he was psychotic or otherwise incapable of entering a plea time of the plea hearing.
That's correct.
Your argument is instead that because he was psychotic, according to Dr. Davis's opinion, right, at the time of the event, he should have been able to withdraw his plea.
Yes, and go back to square one. And I might add that...
Is that a trial strategy?
Pardon me?
Is that a trial strategy?
Say that again?
Trial strategy? Was that determination made by...
I suspect
your client. And
I'm reading in between the lines on some of this. We get to the motion for examination from the state, and then we have the district court order granting that examination. And about a month later, or less than a month later, the trial counsel files a motion to determine indigency, and he wanted to hire experts and an investigator. And that ultimately was denied about a month later. But my reading between the lines is that the client was probably out of money. And entering a plea, obviously, is a lot easier than taking something to trial. So, I'm not basing that on any fact. That's my conjecture. But
by record, we don't know record.
No, that's just
why they made this determination, other than they dropped from 29 felonies to the
six, eight
or whatever he pled to.
What is of note, though, is there are, I've been practicing criminal defense for over 30 years, and I've never seen a written plea agreement in a state case. I have in federal court. And they chose to have a seven-page plea agreement with this gentleman waiving his right to an insanity defense. And to me, that was saying that they were anticipating there may be problems with that. And my final argument on that would be just that you can't waive a medical condition. You can't waive...
Isn't that a good practice from both sides of a criminal case to have a written plea agreement?
It's acceptable, obviously, but I just thought this case had a lot of traction in the press back then, and I think the fact that it was sheriff's deputies that were potential victims, none of them were hurt. Mr. Warner was ultimately shot four times. He lost a leg in the course of this, and I think there was a bit of prosecutorial overkill, if you will. 29 counts, written plea agreement, totally ignoring the fact that there was a psychiatric examination. And I just think this gentleman should be given another chance to examine that defense.
Ineffective assistance of counsel, can we get to that issue on this record?
Not that I recall. Yeah. I just...
I think you were about to say, and this was referenced in your brief, that you can't waive an insanity
medical condition. That's correct.
Why not?
Because it'd be like me going to the doctor and the doctor says, you have cancer. And I said, well, I'll waive that. The cancer isn't going to go away.
Well, you're not waiving the condition.
I know that, but
why can you not waive an insanity defense?
I think it's a misinformed.
If there's no contention as to competency at the time of the plea.
I think it's a misinformed plea. And again, at the sentencing, they reviewed the motion to withdraw plea. This was represented by Mr. James Martin Davis at the time, and that was denied after a lengthy hearing. And it probably should have been granted, and the full-blown evaluation should have taken place.
I don't think I understood your answer to Justice Funk's question about whether we can or cannot reach the ineffective assistance of counsel claim on this record.
Not in black and white, no. But
does it need to go to post-conviction?
Probably. That would be my, but I wanted to start at this juncture. You know, and we're asking the court to vacate the plea and sentence and remand it back to district court to square one, basically. And
with your position, you had that anyone who has potential insanity defense should not be able to waive that. Does that mean that anyone who has potential insanity defense never has a right to a plea bargain?
That's my gut reaction to it. Yeah. You know,
do
the
you
humanist.
Have any authority for this proposition?
No, and as a matter of fact, when I did my research to even write this brief, there's very little case law addressing these issues. And so it's sort of coming from the heart, I guess, is the best way to put it. But yeah, this gentleman clearly had an episode that did not continue once he's on his medication. So I think once the regional center would have reviewed his condition, they would have come to a different conclusion as far as his rehabilitation.
Do you think this principle, if we were to go along with you, would lay the groundwork for other types
yes.
of defenses that could not be waived by a competent defendant?
Yes, I think it would. I just, as I say, there was very little on this, and so you know, I'm going to old English law and things like that, so that's where we get back to the 1840s with this. But, you know, my summation is that hospitalization, not incarceration on this gentleman. I think he clearly was having a tough time. He's reputable. He's got a master's degree from Regis University, 4 years in the Marines, and so this was an entirely isolated episode.
There were indications that he was using mushrooms and marijuana.
Well, but again, Dr. Davis said regardless of alcohol or drug use.
That's what Dr. Davis's opinion, but the evidence was that he was using illicit drugs at the time or before the
yes.
event. So, I mean, that could have, in the issue of going to trial and insane defense,
yeah.
that evidence would have come in. The jury would have heard that as well.
Yes. But I think they could have made their decision. I think it's really important
that
the jury hear
that. Isn't that a trial strategy? I got the insanity defense in my favor, but I got the drugs and alcohol that weigh against me, so maybe I make an informed decision to plead at 6 counts versus try 29 counts and be found guilty of all of those again.
Well, I think Dr. Davis's, as I say, evaluation does say, you know, there's evidence of drug use and alcohol intake, but that that did not overpower the potential for this mental illness.
And we don't know what the regional center or Dr.
No.
Harmid's
no.
evaluation was because it was never completed.
I would like to know, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. Apparently the critical issue is whether or not Warner should have been allowed to withdraw his plea. The court found he did not establish any fair and just reason, and the court did not abuse its discretion in so finding. There had been a full-blown examination by Dr. Terry Davis, and as a result of that full-blown examination, he filed a notice of insanity. Sometime after that, several months after that, a plea agreement was then entered, a written plea agreement, which incidentally is not the first one this court has seen, and I certainly hope it will not be the last. I think they're an excellent idea because it sets forth exactly what everybody is thinking and what everybody agrees to. As part of that plea agreement, which incidentally Warner initialed every page, signed at the end of it, and informed the court he had read and understood at the time he entered that plea agreement, he acknowledged that he would be waiving the insanity defense by pleading no contest. He pled no contest. He is now not waiving the insanity defense, which puts, I think, the state in the position if it is of a mind to void the plea agreement. That's an issue that is not for us to decide at this point. But the point is that I'm trying to make is that the defendant was fully aware of the insanity defense. He had filed a motion to bring that before the court, and then upon further consultation with his attorney and with the state, a very favorable plea agreement was reached whereby 29 felony counts were reduced to 6, to which he entered a knowing and voluntary plea of no contest. Now he wants to, quote, further explore the issue of insanity. Basically, he wants to complete a second examination in the hope that it will confirm the first. I'm not sure he has any kind of right to that. If he wants to pay for it, I think he can probably do that. I don't know that the state is obliged to continue an examination when he is essentially the one who cut it short by entering into a plea agreement. No fair and just reason was entered for it because the agreement was knowingly and voluntarily entered. Even his own forensic psychiatrist said that he was competent to stand trial, which means he's competent to enter a plea. He entered a plea.
Are those standards the same, competent to stand trial and competent to enter a plea?
I think so. If you are competent to withstand the rigors of a what would in this case probably be a couple of week trial, I don't know why you wouldn't be competent to waive your constitutional rights and forego all of that and enter into a plea.
Well, regardless of the answer to that question, is there not a difference in our analysis that there may have been a psychotic episode at the time of the incident, which does not necessarily mean that he's unwell at the time of the plea?
There's a distinction between the two, yes. He and I think that's...
So
that's,
we're looking at what do we know at the time of the plea. That's
correct.
The centerpiece of this discussion.
Right. And at the time of the plea, he understood that he had a potential defense of insanity and that it was a voluntary and knowing choice to forego that defense and enter into the plea agreement. It's essentially a waiver of a defense like you waive any other defense. I don't know why that would be, if you have a potential medical defense, why it would be carved in stone and inviolate. I think you can waive any defense that you choose to if you are presented with a sufficiently favorable plea agreement like he was in this particular case. You're not waiving a medical defense. It's just,
Is it relevant for our consideration? I think Ms. Eustace is suggesting maybe he was sort of overcharged with 29 counts, that he got a good deal.
I don't think the people who are being shot at think that.
Is any of that relevant to the fact that he has a plea deal for 6 counts?
I don't think so. The state is entitled to charge what it thinks it can prove, and based on the 29 counts, I don't think there was a single one that they couldn't prove with a certain amount of ease. I mean, he's shooting at law enforcement, he's strangling his wife, he's strangling his son, he's poking a knife at his friend. He was behaving very strangely, there's no question about that. And there is, and as Judge Cashel pointed out, I think it was Judge Funk, there was substantial evidence that he had been using drugs and alcohol. He was texting people from the hospital about how drunk he was at the time of the incident. There's absolutely no assurance that the jury would have said, why, we believe every word that comes out of Dr. Davis's mouth, when all this other evidence would have been presented to at least mitigate an insanity defense in this particular case.
On the ineffective assistance of counsel assignment of error, is it the state's position that it's adequately stated, but that it can't be reached on this record?
Yes. I think he's preserved the claims for post-conviction. It can't be resolved.
Preserved a deficiency. I just like that preserved language because I think it is perhaps imprecise. He's sufficiently alleged deficient conduct.
Yes.
But on direct appeal, we're not addressing prejudice at all on this record.
That's correct. That's really a more precise way to put it. He has adequately alleged for post-conviction purposes. I won't use the word preserve. But he has adequately alleged those claims such that they may be addressed at post-conviction. Is that better?
If he alleged prejudice. he's not required to allege prejudice at this stage, and we don't know what his allegations would be. So that if I still think it's imprecise to say that he has sufficiently alleged a claim for post-conviction, because we don't know what the prejudice half of his claim would be.
That's correct. It appears that his claim will have to, would relate somewhat to entering into the plea agreement without further pursuing the insanity defense. I think whatever permutations that has been, I'm going to say it, preserved for post-conviction. I think that claim has been adequately presented such that it would, we know that it will be coming in post-conviction. Beyond that, I think it's going to have to wait and see what else he decides he needs to claim in post-conviction, but I think that particular issue has been adequately presented such that it can be addressed later in post-conviction. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the judgment and sentences be affirmed in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Mr. Eustace, were you appointed in this matter?
No, sir.
Okay. We still appreciate your service. Thank you very much.